Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You would think that in the United States of America, the world's oldest constitutional democracy, that even in a time of polarization, there would be one thing that citizens could count on: the ballot box and the validity of the vote. But ever since the razor-thin contested victory of George W. Bush in 2000, the credibility of the vote itself has become a headline issue. Hanging chads were bad, but new electronic voting has come with its own vulnerabilities. New voter registration regulations and voter ID requirements have come with problems of their own. A week from tomorrow, a system in flux gets a major test in the midterms. Up next on Point, making every ballot count. We look at the validity of the American vote. Joining me first from Washington is Sean Green. He's research director at electionline.org. It is billed as the nation's only nonpartisan, non-advocacy website providing news and analysis on election reform. It came out with a big report last week looking at potential trouble spots in next Tuesday's midterm elections. Sean Green, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll get to what you found, but first, just the response to your report in the last week. What's your assessment of the level of fear and concern among Americans about the credibility, the validity, the security of the vote?
I think there is a fairly strong concern out there. And in fact, in the past week after our report, we even saw several polls asking people about their confidence in the vote. And the numbers, especially in certain demographic groups, aren't very good for the confidence in the accuracy and validity of the vote.
Who's most lacking confidence? What did you see?
When they compared Democrats to Republicans, Democrats had more concerns, as did African Americans.
Do those fears look justified to you? When you talk to American citizens, do you say, go with fear and trepidation into this process, or it's fundamentally sound?
Well, not go with fear and trepidation, but try to be prepared as possible in the sense of finding out, double-checking your register before Election Day, figuring out where your polling place is, and educating yourself in the kind of voting technology that's in use in your polling place. I think what we've noticed, the states that we pointed out in the report that might have potential trouble spots have sort of a combination of, as you mentioned, close congressional races in combination with fairly new technology and new requirements such as voter identification or new voter registration requirements.
Sean, 2000 was such a bell ringer in terms of raising American concern about how the vote works. It was so close, and we all saw what happened in Florida, so much controversy about that. 2004 had its own controversy, some pretty significant. Where are we in the American response to the concerns that, to say the least, that were put on the table by those two elections? What's happened since then, in terms of addressing, responding?
Well, I could sort of say we're still actually in the beginning process of responding to those changes. The Help America Vote Act, which was passed in 2002 in response to what happened in Florida in 2000, tried to address some of those issues. And it focused on voting technology, voter registration, provisional ballots at the polls so no one would be turned away from the polls if they were not on the registration list. The problem we've seen is that while most people seemed pleased to move away from punch cards, the move to new technology, new requirements, but a whole new set of concerns, I think, which were unexpected for some people, but not for all.
Take us into those. Where are the concerns that are rising now? What are they?
Well, I think as we've discussed, the biggest concerns are the voting technology and specifically electronic voting. Not only during this primary season, states that have rolled out their electronic voting machines for the first time, there have been a number of problems having to do with the machines themselves and poll workers' interaction with the machines. I think that's sort of what's causing the biggest stir. But there's also new voter identification requirements in certain states that certain groups feel are too restrictive and might disenfranchise certain people at the polls.
Give us an example. What's the most extreme requirement of voter ID being rolled out that the voters will face in this voting day next week?
Well, there are two states, Indiana and Florida, that now require photo identification at the polls. And if you don't have a photo ID, you're You can then cast a provisional ballot, which will then be checked. Your registration status would be checked later for its validity. There were two other states, Georgia and Missouri, that also passed photo ID laws, but they were actually struck down by courts. So for now in those states, they'll just ask all voters to show ID, photo or non-photo ID.
And the concern there is that people simply may not vote because they're afraid they don't have the right ID when they get to the polls?
Correct. Exactly. That people... just if they don't have the correct ID, they might not go to the polls, or there's fears they might be incorrectly turned away at the polls if they don't have the correct ID, or that a provisional ballot is not a regular ballot, and how a provisional ballot is counted, if that's what they have to cast, is counted differently than a regular ballot. So there's that concern as well.
What's driven these moves in Indiana and Florida and elsewhere? Is there evidence that there was, in fact, people, voting early and often? Was that the problem here? Or non-citizens voting? Was there evidence of substantial abuse on this front?
I think that's been the concern, and certainly this is the most, I would say, partisan issue in election reform, is that Republicans pretty much across the board support stricter and stronger identification rules, and Democrats tend to oppose it as saying they suppress the vote. What's interesting, though, is both sides have presented a lot of anecdotal evidence, but there's not been a lot of studies on either side showing sort of across the board numbers of the concerns that are mentioned. Certainly, though, what we have seen in the past, and this is true, is that there are, I think the concern is that there are dead voters on the registration rolls, and people worry that could lead to potentially someone not alive voting. But there hasn't been a lot of cases of actual polling place voter fraud that have been substantiated.
Now, what about new regulations surrounding registration, tightening up or making that easier? What are the trends there? Where are the areas of concern?
I think the trends have been to tightening up in certain states. In Ohio and Florida, for example, they passed laws where third-party registration groups, where,
League of Women Voters,
groups, that exactly, kind of group. Would register voters and hand in registration forms that were invalid or incomplete or fraudulent. And I think those states responded by saying, okay, we're going to pass laws that impose more regulations on who can hand these in, what sort of training process you have to go through, that sort of thing. In both those states, those laws actually got struck down by courts as being too restrictive. But that's been the move. I think there's been concern that that some are concerned that some of these groups return fraudulent or just poorly filled out registration forms.
Well, the concern on the other side is that the tightening the regulations around registration make it harder to get more citizens to the polls. With those having been struck down by courts, are there any new tighter registration regulations actually in effect for these midterms, 2006?
Well, when it comes to filling out your registration form, in Arizona, for example, they passed something called Proposition 200, which has actually recently gone back and forth with the courts, which one required ID at the polls, but also required when you hand in your registration form that you provide proof of citizenship. That has gone back and forth. That's still in effect and has been in effect in Arizona for all of 2006.
So issues around ID, issues around registration, and maybe above all, in voters' mind, concern around lots of new technology being put out there, particularly in this vote. We're joined right now from Baltimore by Avi Rubin. He's professor of computer science at Johns Hopkins University, author of the new book, Brave New Ballot, The Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting. Avi Rubin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So where is the edge, the sort of hot edge of concern around electronic balloting? How many more Americans will be doing it this year, and how confident can they be in the outcome of those touchscreen or other electronic votes?
Well, the number of people voting on electronic voting machinery is unprecedented, and it's very high right now. We have 39% of voters will vote on these touchscreen voting machines. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of cause for concern. In many places, the electronic machines have absolutely no paper record of the votes. And so you've got basically what amounts to a Windows machine in most cases, a self-contained computer with a voting application on it, and the voters will go up and make their selections and vote, and the votes will be tallied on a computer memory card. Mm. The problem with that is there's no way to audit such a system. So if there's a bug in the software and the machines get the wrong answer, we might never know it, or we might get some ridiculous result and we'd know there was a problem, but there would be no way to recover from it. And you can't perform any recounts on these systems. I think the potential for vote rigging and vote fraud is very high, especially when you consider that we can't tell for sure if it happened or not. And so certain kinds of outcomes in the election could spark all kinds of theories about what happened, and there would be nothing that we could do the way we did in Florida 2000, which is an example of a very difficult election that we had. But bad as it was with all the ads, we were able to have a recount and observe the process.
Avi Rubin, so potential for manipulation, you say there also potential for glitches. I mean, new software, people just don't know how to use it, or problems within the software. Which do you see as the greater concern, active manipulation or just computer glitches as we all have come to know and not love them?
Well, my biggest concern is the collection of those, that collectively they result in an election where we can't know that we got the right answer. And I think, you know, I don't know how likely it is that fraud will occur. I guess whoever loses was likely to have some claim, and I think the claim will be a lot stronger if there's a system that's not auditable and which can't be recounted.
Avi, on the electronic front, so many more people now are going to be voting that way in 2006. What's your answer here? What is it that you're proposing that will bolster, could bolster voter confidence in the accuracy, honesty, security of the vote electronically?
Well, I've been studying this now for several years, and I've seen all kinds of technologies. There are really multiple ones, and the best one that I think we could have would be paper ballots. And the paper ballots, we can use technology to augment the process quite a bit. We could use computer touchscreens to mark the paper ballots. So you go up to a touchscreen machine and you make your selections, and it prints out a filled-out paper ballot, mm-hmm. which is basically the same one you would fill out with a pencil, except the ovals will be filled in perfectly. And you get a lot of advantages of the electronics there in terms of the interface that the voter has, which is a nice touchscreen, which voters like and avoids all kinds of problems.
Is such a system deployed and ready to be used next Tuesday anywhere right now?
I believe that they are using it in several places. There's a system, the most widely known system of this sort is called the AutoMark, and I've only given you half of the equation because now I've described a way in which voters mark a ballot. It's a paper ballot, but then how you count it is very important as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to see would be precinct-level optical scanners, which is you don't take these papers and then try to transmit them before they've been counted to a central place, but you count them right in the precinct with an optical scanning machine. Now, obviously, that's an electronic machine as well. The difference between that electronic machine and a touchscreen voting machine that counts votes is that you can audit it. You can feed it all kinds of ballots and then count the ballots by hand and compare them to the totals that the optical scanner gets without knowledge in advance of which machines you're going to audit.
So in a way, you're saying keep it local and at some level, keep it simple.
Keep it simple and keep it local. Now, think about how much software you're trusting in a system like this. If you're auditing these optical scanners, then you're not trusting the software on them, and it's very little software to begin with. Whereas if you use the electronic voting machines, you've got, in the case of the Diebold AccuVote, which we use in Maryland, 50,000 lines of code in the software on top of millions of lines of Windows. And so I think, as a computer scientist, that it's a bad idea to trust the elections to software, which can have bugs and can be manipulated in a way that cannot be detected.
A lot of people not exactly trusting software right now, but nevertheless likely to be using it next Tuesday. I want to invite another voice into our conversation. Joining us from New York, Mark Crispin Miller is with us. He's professor of culture and communication at New York University, author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One Too Unless We Stop Them. Mark Crispin Miller, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
You're right out there. I mean, you're not cutting any corners here in your description. You say elections have been stolen already, and they're going to be stolen again. How can you be so sure? Is the evidence so clear looking forward?
Well, it is quite clear, unfortunately. I want to make a crucial point here.
Mm-hmm.
This is really not a technical issue. Certainly, technical matters are all important, and I'm fully in agreement that the use of touchscreen machines is very dangerous, and I think we should get rid of them. But this is not a technical issue at heart. This is a civic issue. This is about our right to vote. And so I don't think we should be concentrating on looking for, you know, the better mousetrap. We certainly need to discuss, you know, the simplest safest, most transparent method of voting.
But doesn't it boil down, Mark Crispin Miller, to, at the end of the process, how we punch that ballot and how it's counted, and on the way to that process, how people register, how they identify themselves? I mean, aren't all of these steps what, in total, add up to confidence or a lack of confidence?
Well, yes. What we need is a process that's completely transparent. We actually need popular control and oversight of the election system. You know, elections per se are not the hallmark of democracy. Saddam Hussein had elections. We need a system that is not in the hands of the two political parties, and I know that may sound utopian, but the fact is that the partisan control of the system has really, over the decades in this country, made for an extremely untrustworthy system, which now, I argue, is being manipulated by one party while the other party sits by and does nothing. There are countless examples of all sorts of anomalies and improprieties and glitches, some of them technical, some of them not. And in almost every case, they've only benefited one party.
Point to the sharpest evidence you've got of not just, bumbling, but manipulation.
Sure. Well, there, in the 2004 election, for example, there were thousands of reports from 11 states, not just Ohio, of machines systematically flipping votes, electronic votes, from Kerry to Bush. Now, I'm not a Democrat, Tom. I mean, I'm a Chicagoan, so, you know, I know too much to be a Democrat. So I looked very hard to find examples of vote flipping from Bush to Kerry.
Machines flipping votes. You're talking like software that would change a vote once it was in the bank?
Well, I'm talking about people literally pressing the button for Kerry and having the Bush light go off. You know, I mean, if people want to see firsthand accounts of this kind of thing, they should consult a very valuable archive of firsthand information called the Election Incident Reporting System. That's EIRS.
And are you saying that Karl Rove or Ken Mellman sort of went out and jimmied with these machines?
Well, I'm not saying they personally went out and jimmied with them. What I'm telling you is that if it were simply an innocent glitch, mm-hmm. Tom, then we would have seen an equal number, a roughly equal number of examples on each side of the partisan divide. What I'm telling you is that in 2004, there were almost no examples of these machines benefiting the Democrats. And if people go to my blog, which is at markcrispinmiller.com, they'll find reports of early voting that's already taken place, this time in Texas, Arkansas, and Missouri, where there have been dozens of reports of the same thing, people trying to vote for Democrats, and the machine won't seem to respond. It seems to want them to vote Republican.
Professor Miller, stand by for just a moment. Sean Green, there you are, research director at electionline.org. You're hearing here the charge of straight-up manipulation. You hear the instances that Marcus Miller is pointing to. You've done a lot of research very recently. Are you nodding your head in agreement, or is this beyond what you found?
Well, it's not something that we focused on our report, but I think the issue.
Why not? Whether or not there's manipulation, wouldn't you pay attention to that? Wouldn't that be a fundamental?
Well, yes, that's true, but we would more focus on, again, we're focused on the process and the voting machines and the more technical aspect.
So is the process corrupt or not? Mark Crispin Miller is saying straight up it's corrupt and it's manipulated. Did you find evidence to support that or not?
We did not find evidence to support that, but what we, you know, I think his point about transparency is actually one of the big issues in election reform. And one aspect of that, say, voting machines in the U.S. are certified by certain companies. And the companies that certify these machines are actually the certifiers are actually funded by the voting machine companies. And I think a lot of people find that not a very transparent process and want that to change. So that's the sort of thing we found in our report.
Mark Crispin Miller, here's the research director at electionline.org. He says, well, no, we did not find evidence to support the case for manipulation. You're saying you found abundant evidence. What do you make of that gap?
Well, I respect Sean's work, and he did make clear that he didn't actually look into this particular aspect of the problem. I'm not making stuff up. In my book, Fooled Again, and in several other books that have come out over the last year and a number of other studies, all the stuff is very thoroughly documented. These aren't rumors.
But what should Americans think when they've got the research director on one side saying, we didn't find it, you saying with perfect confidence on the other side, we've got manipulation here?
Well, I think they should look at both sides of the case and make up their own minds. They should certainly read my book, Fooled Again. They should read Steve Freeman's book, Was the 2004 Election Stolen? Came out in June. It's a very important study of the exit polls, which there is no reason to believe were wrong. The idea that 10 exit polls could all be wrong in the same way is frankly statistically impossible. We have accepted the claim that there was something wrong with the exit polls, but we have not actually studied whether they were accurate or not. And Steve's book is a very good start for people wanting to look into this. There's a brand new book out by Bob Fitrakis called What Happened in Ohio. It's full of primary documents, Tom, demonstrating that Kerry probably won Ohio last time by as many as 350,000 votes.
Professor Miller, where are you going to be focused next Tuesday? Where is your eagle eye going to be looking?
Well, I'm going to be involved with the Election Defense Alliance, which is in turn going to partner with other groups, and we're going to try to have our eagle eyes all over the country. I mean, the fact is, it's crucial that people get out and vote. My belief is, not because they can be confident that their choices will prevail, because it's not possible to be confident of that. I think people should get out to vote as a protest on behalf of fair and free elections, because frankly, the higher the turnout on Election Day, the harder it will be for the Republicans in this case to basically spin their victory as legitimate. I don't think they could possibly win in a fair election.
But, well, we're glad for the call to vote in any case, and we hear the case you're making right there. Mark Crispin Miller at NYU, author of Fooled Again, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Avi Rubin, how about it? You're looking forward. You've expressed your concerns. What about the charge that Americans have been manipulated already? Have you found evidence of that in the electronic realm?
I have not, but I have not been looking for evidence of that. I've been focusing my attention on looking at the current technologies, finding the problems with them, highlighting them and exposing them, and making recommendations for the best kind of technology that we can use. I'm a computer scientist working with a lot of lawyers and political scientists, and I know my limitations. And when I'm asked about whether we need a constitutional amendment for this or that, I step aside and say I don't know the answer to that. But if you ask me about software, I can definitely comment on that.
There's another big critique of process, and it's all around voter ID and who's voting and whether or not they're eligible and properly registered to vote. I want to turn right now to New York and John Fund, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, author of Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy. Here's a critique from another angle. John Fund, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure.
So you hear the range of concerns around voting, and it's a sad thing to have this range at all, but you bring another facet to the table that's got your attention, voter ID and voter fraud. What are you most concerned about next week?
Well, first let me say I think that some of the concerns about electronic voting are valid. Diebold has a very spotty record as a company. They spend only 10% on electronic voting machines as they do making ATM machines.
But they're the biggest provider at this point,
well,
are they not?
I agree there's some problems. We need oversight. We certainly need open source software, audits, things like that. But I think the more extreme conspiracy theories have to be addressed. And I don't ask people to believe me. I cite Joe Andrew, who was Bill Clinton's chairman of the Democratic National Committee until 2001. He was Bill Clinton's handpicked chairman. He is the only national political chairman who's ever been involved in the Internet. Mm. He's owned several companies, although nothing with voting machines. He gave a speech a little bit ago to the Maryland Association of Election Officials in which he basically said, when it comes to electronic voting, most liberal conspiracy theorists are just old, plain old-fashioned nuts. He says there is no conspiracy trying to steal votes in America today. And he says it's unfortunate that we have this anti-electronic voting machine bandwagon being circulated because, quote, it is not possible to move a constant fraction of votes from one party to another in each jurisdiction without it being obvious that something is going on. The Internet activists who say this are bonkers, unquote.
John, we've got that, and we hear the sort of the balance that you make there. Alas, there's no way to solve that issue right here, now.
We do need more money spent on this. We do need more auditing. We certainly should address each and every concern. I'm simply saying I don't think people should make the leap from the technical difficulties to Manchurian computer programmers in a back room hacking. We've had optical scanned voting machines and computers for 30 years. There has never been a documented case of those being hacked into and the results being changed.
And you're saying watch out for toxic cynicism, and we hear that because it can keep voters away from the polls all by itself. I want to get you to come to the voter ID issue that you've been most focused on, as I understand it, John.
Well, voter ID is something which I don't think should be controversial. As Andrew Young, the former U.N. ambassador and Atlanta mayor, a civil rights leader, has said, if there are poor people out there who don't have voter ID because they're elderly or they're completely out of the mainstream of society, let's bring them into the mainstream of society and make sure they get a free voter ID. You can't really do anything in American life today without such an ID. You can't cash a check. You can't travel. You can't check into a hotel.
You can vote without it in most states, though. And is that really a problem, though?
That's the point. I believe that that has created strong suspicions that there's possibility for manipulation and misrepresentation at the polls. We have a lot of examples. I can cite you examples from a dozen states of people who have showed up, claimed that they are somebody that they aren't, and turn out never to be found again. In Wisconsin, which has same-day voter registration, we had 12,000 people show up in Milwaukee, register and vote the same day. When they sent out the registration card to the address listed, it came back undeliverable. We don't know how many of those people weren't eligible, but it certainly should give ground for suspicion.
Sean Green, here's another allegation of manipulation. Do you see it in a scale sufficient to influence elections?
We haven't seen any huge studies that that sort of go across the nation that show sort of statistically that. But those anecdotal stories are everywhere. In fact, there was a story this weekend in a New York paper that just studied the voter registration list in New York and found about 75,000 dead voters on the list. And some of them that had voted. Now, they weren't sure if those were clerical errors or not. But I think that's the concern that's out there, that if there's not actual fraud going on, that the potential for fraud is there and
so
the perception is there.
It may discourage some voters. It may clean up other aspects of this. As your group come down on whether or not a stricter voter ID is a good thing on balance for the American vote, Sean?
Actually, we have not. We're a non-advocacy group, and we stay pretty clear. We just want to present the issues. We don't come down on one side or the other on those issues.
John Fund, are you worried about Americans' attitude toward their own vote as we head into the midterms here, toward its cleanliness?
We see polls, both from Zogby and Rasmussen, that something like 15% of the American people don't believe their vote is counted properly, or they believe that it's canceled out by someone who shouldn't be voting. That is a level of toxic cynicism which help explains our lower voter turnout.
John Fund, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure.
Robert's calling from Simsbury, Connecticut. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for the show.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that come to mind. You know, one, of course, is the whole issue of voter suppression and properly making the vote available to the people who deserve it. But just on the technical issue, it seems to me that there really is not a very complex technical problem with voting machines. It's you know, when you go to an ATM, do you ever get the wrong amount of money? Does the amount of money charged from your account, is it ever wrong? When you get your bank statement, you're trusting computers and the people who run them to make sure all of your savings are there.
Yeah, but we have a fair idea what our savings are. We can always go back and check the balance. You know, if you can't check that, if you couldn't look in, well, you might feel differently.
Well, that's right. So what you need, and computers are very good at this as well, is providing audit trails. Do they have to be on paper? I'm not really so sure. How about open source systems? How about pieces of the puzzle that are done by different development teams that for instance, when you fly, there's maybe four or five different companies doing the flight control software because it's so very important.
Right. Make it clearer that way electronically. Avi Rubin, how about it? Open source, different teams working on this. Would there be a way without paper to come around and raise confidence?
Well, I think that open source is important in the sense of transparency, but I believe it's a distraction. I think that we need voting systems that don't require you to trust the software. Elections are a very, very sensitive, heated area where you're going to get people who are going to claim that there was fraud and that there were problems. And I think that independent electronic verification might be possible in theory. I think it would take about 10 years of research to get to a point where we could have a system that we could trust. And even then, I'm not certain it would be a good idea. But I also believe that from the point of view of transparency, audit, and recovery, which are the most important things, electronic verification is not a good idea. I don't want to have voting systems that are susceptible to extended power outages, for example. And I think a simple paper ballot system is so much easier to manage and audit that moving to an independent electronic verification is a bad idea.
Sean Green, with the problems we've heard around electronic voting in this hour, are there moves afoot to really respond to this? Or is this technology rolling out across most of the country even as these potential problems are being cited? I mean, is it what we're getting, even if it's not the best option?
It has been rolling out in the past few years. I mean, certainly states have moved to these machines even after concerns have been voiced for the past 3 or 4 or 5 years from computer scientists
and
from others.
Why do we move ahead then if these problems are serious and incredible?
Well, I think, you know, some election officials are staunch defenders of the machines. In Maryland, for example, the election director there thinks the machines work quite well and has advantages that other machines don't have.
But didn't I read about big problems just this earlier this year in Maryland?
Yes, you did, in the September primary.
What were those again?
A number of problems that Avi could probably speak to as well, with problems with poll workers not having the cards to start the machines up, problems with the machines themselves, screens freezing, therefore delaying opening of the polls for an hour, 2 hours, meaning people were turned away and maybe didn't come back to vote. And this is not the first time Maryland had been running these elections on these machines. For this to pop up 2 to 4 years after they've been running elections on these machines, I thought was probably a little surprising to election officials themselves.
Avi Rubin, do you see a move to pick up on these problems and address them, or are we moving down a path that you're saying isn't a good one? And if so, why?
Well, there was an attempt in Maryland in the House of Delegates. A bill was introduced that would have moved us to paper ballots with optical scan in Maryland. And I have a lot at stake in this, in addition to my concern with the issue, is I'm an election judge and I work at the polls. And I understand why the elections director and others support these machines in the one sense that it's a lot easier to administer an election where everything is being done by computers than if we had the paper ballots. My work would have been a lot harder on election day. That bill that was in the House passed unanimously, and our governor came out and said that he would sign it and support it. Unfortunately, when it went to the Senate, it died in committee and it never came out. But I've already been contacted, and now we're before the November 7th election, and I've already been contacted by a delegate asking me to help them proofread and help edit a revised version of this bill that they're going to introduce as soon as the election is over to try to move us to paper. So, you know, there are people that understand the issue, and then there are people who support the machines, I think, because it would be embarrassing for them to admit a $106 million mistake in Maryland.
Let's turn to Eileen in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Eileen. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I'm actually going to go down to my registrar today and vote absentee ballot, because this has just really bothered me so much. But my question is, why can't we, American citizens, vote on our computers?
You mean sit at home and just sort of mail it in over the Internet? Would that make you feel better, more secure about your vote, Eileen?
Well, at least I would feel that my computer hadn't been tampered with.
Hard to tamper with everybody's computer. Avi Rubin, what about it? Let's spread it out all over the place so no one can tamper with the whole system.
Well, unfortunately, while I think that would be great for convenience, and I was the first to adopt every kind of Internet system and Internet shopping and banking as it came up, I think for voting it would be a big mistake. If you put a Windows machine on the Internet, the average amount of time it takes before some virus or worm tries to infect it is 8 seconds. The Internet right now, especially running Windows machines, is absolutely insecure. And everything from spyware that could be on your machine and see how you vote to malicious code that could change your vote. As much as I'm opposed to precinct-based electronic voting, I think that the problems of Internet-based PC voting are hundreds of times worse and an absolute non-starter.
I've got an email here from Colorado Springs where John says he voted early in Colorado on a Diebold machine. You can do that in Colorado. 11 electronic pages, moving back and forth to figure it all out. So much trouble. He wishes he hadn't done it, wishes he had voted absentee, as Eileen plans to do. Let's take a call from George in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Tom. I really appreciate the fact that you're dealing with this topic because it's a can of worms. And I've tried to raise it with major journalists, most recently Tom Edsel, and immediately, as John Fund did, you're called a conspiracy theorist. We need to get beyond this. This is our vote. This is my vote. This is your vote. They need to be counted honestly, accurately, and verifiably.
George, do you think it will be close enough for horseshoes next week on Tuesday?
No, I don't. I've read some things that lead me to believe, and I would like to hear confirmation of this, that, as has been stated, around 39% of the votes will be on electronic touch screens, but up to 50% of the most closely watched districts are not going to be able to be recounted.
It's a disconcerting feeling. George, thanks for your call. Sean, how about it? You're talking about fear now that the margin of victory is within the margin of error, which is the kind of fear George is expressing right there. We could have close races all over the place.
Yes, and I think we also sometimes call it within the margin of litigation is what we sort of call it now. And, you know, you're going to have losing candidates who maybe, you know, lose a House race by several hundred votes. If there's any sort of concern over voting machines or process, an example for in Ohio, I think there's at least one or two competitive House races. And there's been a debate going on this past week over voter ID rules where judges have gone back and forth in changing those rules. To me, that seems potentially ripe for some sort of challenge after an election if it's close.
So, I mean, do you expect to have all kinds of litigation after? And if we do, but there's no way to recount, what happens?
Well, there are ways to recount, but just not in Ohio. They do have a paper trail. Just in states that use electronic voting without a paper trail, basically you'd just be rerunning the computer again. There would be no – you would just be rerunning the computer count one more time.
You're not going back to the fundamental source material. So how do court challenges get settled in that case?
Well, I mean, a court challenge would be over – it could be over a variety of things. I think we've seen challenges over equal protection, different machines in use in different counties. Is that treating people differently? But again, I think, you know, there would be probably potential litigation over things like voter ID rules and absentee ballots. I think that's what sort of we've been reading about recently in Ohio.
Avi Rubin, last word goes to you here today. You can imagine voters listening to this, and it's deeply disconcerting. At the same time, you know, if you don't vote, there's no way your vote gets counted. What's your message to American citizens in this time of flux between the old ways of voting and the new? How should citizens think about this?
Well, absolutely, the wrong way to respond to this is not to vote. I think, like you said, the only way to guarantee that your vote won't be counted is not to go cast it. I actually recommend to people to get more involved in the process, like I did, become an election judge or a poll worker, wherever you are. And as far as the problems with the machines, well, that's a matter of awareness and letting your legislators, your congressmen know how you support this. I've been contacted by federal legislators asking me to review some bills that are being introduced at the national level, and there are many states, 28 states have already adopted legislation requiring voter-verified paper records. So I think that it should be in the form of advocacy, but not going to the polls because of this problem is a big mistake.
Keep a sharp eye out, jump in there and vote, and then just doggedly follow it up. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Avi Rubin at Johns Hopkins, author of Brave New Ballot. Avi, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Sean Green, director of research at electionline.org. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new MDX with available real-time traffic monitoring. More information at Acura.com.